Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, where we discuss all sorts of things Germanic heathenry related. My name is Jesse. I am your host. Let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, everybody. Hail and welcome back to this week's podcast, the Random Heathen Ramblings Prod podcast, a Midgard Musings production. Thank you so much for coming back and tuning in this week. We've got a guest lined up that's going to be joining us, coming all the way from the Netherlands. I was a guest on his podcast about a month or two ago, I guess. But we're going to be talking today with, his name is Stein Fawkes. And he is a Norse pagan himself in the Netherlands. He is also the host of the Greyhorn Pagans podcast. And as I understand, serves a leadership position as Jarl of the Greyhorn Pagans tribe. We're going to learn more about that because I'm not 100% sure to what degree that tribe extends in terms of, is it, you know, a term that they use for online community, or is it something of a more grassroots level sort of thing? So we're going to be talking with him about that and just trying to get a sense of what's going on in the Netherlands with heathenry. So before we get into that, be sure to please give this video a like, give the channel, you know, a subscription, subscribe to the channel, follow the podcast on all the podcast streaming platforms, wherever it is that you catch it. Do be sure to upvote, like, follow, you know, do all those things. And click the Linktree link down in the description or over here in the show notes, wherever you find it. That Linktree link has all of the ways that you can support this podcast. So follow me on all the socials. There is Patreon that you can subscribe to as well for some added perks or benefits or things that really help support this channel and what I do on the podcast. So do be sure to check that out, and then check the description as well for the links to Greyhorn Pagans podcast and just the Greyhorn Pagans tribe, I guess. It's they got a website. There's some social media things, I think, that you can find. But yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Stick around to the end so you can hear about all the things that we're going to be talking about today. It's going to be another Random Heathen Ramblings with myself and Stein of the Greyhorn Pagans podcast. Let's welcome them in. All right, folks. Well, we are joined here today, as I mentioned earlier, with Stein Fawkes of the Greyhorn Pagans podcast. Stein, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you back here. Actually, well, this is your first time here on my show, but I was just recently, I say recently, but like we filmed the content a month or two ago, and yeah. I guess it just recently aired or released on your platforms, right?
Yeah, just yesterday the audio released on the Greyhorn Pagans podcast, which is a nice sync. Of course, I didn't even do that on purpose, yeah. But it just happened to match up. So
yeah. Well, what was interesting is like while we're recording this today is, of course, in advance to when it's airing, so the people that are listening and watching this will have time to go and check out, you know, what we talked about on your platforms. But we were originally supposed to do this yesterday. So today is Sunday recording. We were originally supposed to do this Saturday. There were some double bookings going on, which happened. But yeah, it does work out perfect today that, you know, our content that we recorded on your show came out the day earlier for us to record this. So it's perfect timing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yesterday was almost triple booked. Even
I hate when that happens.
Oh yeah, that's why I like started putting things in my like actually on my phone calendar and working with like a scheduling app more, because it happens too often.
It's kind of a good problem to have, I guess. You know, it's if you're hunting down people or like scrambling to find guests or content to record, it can be a bit stressful. So I guess the opposite of that is to have more than what you know what to do with at times, and to get yourself together is a good problem to have. You know,
it's a good first world problem, so to speak.
I did that to myself. Last week I was having lunch with some friends, and I had a guy. He was on my show last week, so the last episode prior to this one, I had him scheduled to come on at a specific time, and I'm like eating lunch with some friends, and it was like 30 minutes past, and I had totally forgotten about it. And he messaged me and said, "Hey man, are we still on for today?" I'm like, "Shit, yeah." But can you give me a couple of, can you give me a couple hours? And I felt so bad. He was really cool about it. So it all worked out, obviously. But, yeah, man, like even the best made plans, sometimes, you know, you end up just losing it sometimes. So, but you are in the Netherlands, correct?
Yes. Yes, I am.
So this is pretty cool. I've had some guests on my show from across the world. I've had a gentleman on here from Australia, and I'm trying to think if I've had others here from other parts of the world. You know, I've had different guests from other parts of my country, but you're the first from Europe that I can think of. So this is a pretty exciting thing. How do you feel about having guests from like other parts of the world on your show? What's that like for you when you get to book people on your show?
Well, most of my guests are American, of course. It just seems to be like when it comes to entertainment and podcasting and knowledge, much of it is in the US. I mean, you know, bigger country, the language barrier isn't as big, of course. But you know, I do try to get people from Europe on as well. If I do, they are mostly from the UK and Ireland. I'll soon have a Irish woman on.
Cool.
But yeah, it's quite rare actually if I get to do a podcast in Dutch. I think I've done one or maybe two so far in Dutch, which is quite weird actually, like if I'm because I'm so used to having to speak English, you know, with my my wife being American, of course, you know, there are definitely days that well, most days actually that I speak English more than I do Dutch. So, and especially on podcasts, like 98% is in English. So when I get to speak Dutch, like I have to think about things, like I have to think what I want to say, because it feels weird speaking my own language
really
on the podcast. Yeah, so it's kind of odd, but you know,
I can't imagine, really, man. Like, of course, English is my native language, and I'm not bilingual in the sense that I don't fluently speak other languages. I know some other languages and or words and phrases in other languages, but in terms of conversationally being able to carry a conversation in any language, I probably couldn't. I could get myself into some trouble, like just enough. And like, I know some German, I know some Russian, because I have a friend who's from Belarus, and he taught me, or he was like when I was a younger fellow. We lived nearby each other, and this is going back almost 20 years now. Mm-hmm. He was teaching me Russian back then, and it's almost like riding a bike. I forgot a lot of some of what he taught me, but if I were to like pick up a book and read it or start talking to with him in it in that language again, because that's of course his native language.
Yeah,
I would like pick it back up, and it wouldn't be. But I would be busting my ass along the way, you know, pretty yeah. badly. So that's wild, man. I didn't think that someone who's, you know, you speak English very well. I mean, you have a very good command of the language. So, yeah, props to you for that. But So I wanted to ask you, you know, what you're in the Netherlands, you're from the Netherlands, mm-hmm. of course, yes. And you are a Norse pagan, right? A Germanic heathen.
Norse Germanic, yes.
Okay. And have you always been that? Has that been your spirituality, religion, your whole life?
Well, when I was a bit younger, I want to say like late teens, maybe I started experimenting a bit with religion. Like most of the Netherlands is Catholic or Protestant. Well, Catholic, Roman Catholic. So, you know, religion has always been like around me. My grandparents from father's side were very, very strictly religious. My grandfather was a part of the church choir for the men's choir for like 50, 60 years, like for a long, long time.
Yeah, his whole life.
Pretty much most of it. You know, to church, they went to church every Sunday with my grandmother from mother's side. We usually just did it on the bigger holidays. So Christmas, Easter, you know, we went to the church where she always went when she was a kid, because that's where we would meet the family, you know, the great aunts, the great uncles. That's like pretty much where the family from mother's side would gather around the holidays. So yeah, I tried the Christian Catholic thing for a bit, and I mean it kind of worked. You know, I did get some answers. I did get some things that that I wished for, mm-hmm. but the one thing that really kept me from like going full Christian or going full Catholic was the like how I always call it, the belief or else.
Those absolutes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Being in absolutes. Okay.
Yeah. That was the one hurdle I couldn't pass. Like it just brought so much stress on me, like constantly having to, you know, to watch what I do, watch what I say, watch what I think, even.
Yeah.
That's it. It took over, and it brought on so much stress, and I wasn't really able to do anything else, because like first thing I had to think about is, would this be approved? And so I dropped it. I went through life kind of, well, agnostic, if you will, like believing that there is a higher power. I just, you know, didn't know what it was or who it was or how to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like by my early 20s, really, I think it was 21, 22, I was already kind of going into paganism, animism a bit, because it felt better, also being the original beliefs of Europe, of course, the original gods of Europe. And yeah, funny enough, the TV series Vikings on the History Channel was the real catalyst for me. That's when something just clicked, when I was like, this,
mm-hmm.
this is it. This is what I want. This is what I see. This is what I recognize. And from there, yeah, you know, started looking for groups to join, of course, people to connect with, which is harder than it may seem at the beginning, because like so many groups are just focused on Viking,
you know,
like being a Viking or LARPing as a Viking, and that's cool, you know, of course it's cool, but I want to more. I wanted to go deeper. Like, I don't want it to just, you know, scream Hail Odin or Hail Thor and, you know.
Yeah, the warrior.
That shit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. The warrior-esque aspect of things. And that was a, you know, I you're not the only one. I'm one of them that, you know, started from a religious worldview. I was raised Christian, you know, in a non-denominational version of Christianity, you know. So it wasn't like we had a name to it, you know what I mean? Like, we weren't Baptist, we weren't Protestant, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. non-denominational. But coming from that into a religion that is polytheistic, and then figuring out the, you know, learning the worldview part, that was the most challenging transition, you know, because again, you know, I was raised to believe certain things in a certain way, much like what you were saying is the do this or else, you know.
Yeah,
there was all the dogmatic stuff that, like, you know, what's ironic to me is how much Christianity is, and this is in no way to like bash Christians or anything, because I know plenty of them that are good-hearted people. So I don't use the term and then try to lump everybody into one category, but it's, you know, there's this, all this concepts of you know, love but so how much of the doctrine is fueled by fear and like do this or else kind of thing, like you were saying, you know, it's, if you don't do a certain thing a certain way, if you don't believe a certain way, then you're destined for eternal punishment, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, kind of like with you, I at a certain point in my life reached this ability to think for myself instead of just being led by what others were telling me to believe. And at that point I was like, holy shit, you know, like I'm walking on eggshells, you know, that term, like walking on eggshells this whole time, being afraid to, and then, you know, going into that mindset of trying to figure things out on my own or learning things on my own, right? Trying to, like, all right, well, this is what I was told, but what can I figure out on my own? What can I learn on my own? That was a huge jump into, like, well, I know what happens according to this doctrine that I was raised to believe. I know what happens to people that do stuff like this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or what could happen to people who do stuff like this. It was discouraged. It was not something supported in that belief structure. Really, it's just, you know, have this faith, this blind belief in don't question things, you know. don't challenge it so much.
And, yeah,
I don't know. It was liberating in a way to reach a point that in my life where paganism gave me that opportunity, because I did the same thing, or a very similar thing as you did, right? I stopped going to church. I stopped believing as a Christian would believe. And I really didn't find anything right away. I kind of was like, well, whatever it is, I don't know, but it ain't what I've been raised to believe in. And that's not where I feel at home anymore. So you said that Vikings was a big, you know, catalyst for you to push you into learning about the gods of Europe and where you're from, you know? And, I've not talked to too many people like this in this way. Everybody that I talk to are here on this side of the pond, you know, like Americans as well, mm-hmm. who have found this belief system. And I'm always curious to get someone's perspective who is a native European. When you see so much of non-Europeans discovering this path, you know, and wanting to become more become more integrated in your life. How do you feel about that? Like, do you think it's appropriation? Like, what's your general feeling about things? You know, I'm always curious to hear what people think about that from your perspective. If you're willing to talk about it.
Yeah, no, of course. No, I think appropriation isn't the right term, because, I mean, in a way, every Caucasian American can trace their lineage back to Europe. It's just that I always found it funny that, like, it is mostly Americans who are like where there is such a big wave going on of rediscovering and revival, because this is kind of going back to the it's kind of a controversial idea, but there is some truth in it, the idea of blood and soil, that it's just that it's easier to reconnect with something, you know, with the divine or the gods or whoever, if you truly live in the part of the world, in the lands where, you know, they rule. So the soil type or the soil part may not be the case for most Americans, but definitely the blood part, the lineage, the heritage. I do believe that is a big reason why. And also just looking at how strict and how hard the church can be in the States, it doesn't surprise me one bit that so many people just, you know, leave that behind. My wife actually comes from a very strict religious family. Both her, I believe both grandparents, or like from both sides of the family, were very, very strict. I believe it was from father's side that he even like led a couple of the major churches in the American Northwest. Mm-hmm. So for her to be a eclectic witch, a old time witch, you know, married to a heathen, is something that she's very happy about it, because it feels more like home. But at the same time, she is kind of nervous because of how strict it is and how, you know, dangerous it can be, you know, disowned and all of that. But I'm actually quite thankful for the huge wave going on in the States, because as Europeans, we do still have a tendency to look very much to the United States to, you know, to see what's going on and see what we should be doing, because of the, well, I guess now more perceived superpower. You know, America has always been, you know, the big brother of Europe, so to speak. You know, they got over there, they got a chance to do over, and they did well. Like, they built up this huge freaking empire, so we always try to stay in context, try to stay friends and economic bonds and whatever. And most of our pop culture, of course, coming from the US.
Interesting.
So yeah, I think it's a good thing. And like, I always encourage people who did find their way again back to the European gods to, you know, you found your way back to the gods, now come back over to the motherland.
I know a lot of people like the idea of going on these like journeys, these pilgrimages in a way, right? To return back to a land that the gods are from, basically, you know. And I know that that's a really like native view of things, you know what I mean? The indigenous beliefs, you know, people again feel or maybe have a propensity to feel that you are closer to the gods if you go back to where their stories originated from, you know. Mm-hmm. I've kind of evolved as a pagan myself into like, I appreciate that concept, and at the same time I also find connection to the divine in ways that transcend physical, like physical connection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The earth, the natural elements, all of the things that I feel the gods, right, as characters, as figures, are archetypes in a way to bigger and more inclusive things. And so the natural forces, the elements of nature that were given names by indigenous people, you know, can be felt and connected to wherever you are in the world. It's not like you have to be you know, on the shores of Norway or in Iceland or in what used to be, you know, Saxony in Germany or any of these other places where these gods originate from. It's like you don't have to be there to necessarily feel the essence of the aspects that are described in the stories and the myths and the lore and in the sagas. It adds an element, I think, to it, to if you are able to do so. Mm-hmm. It's just not, at least not for me, it's not like I'm not I don't have this burning desire to just uproot everything I've built here to start over just because of what you're talking about, right? Having that kind of like blood and soil connection. I would still like to travel. I would still like to visit. I would still like to go to places, right? Some of these historical places where, you know, like I would love to visit the archaeological sites of where like Donner's Oak was, you know, and visit some of the name places in Scandinavia that mm-hmm. that still have the names of the gods in their place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that would be really exciting.
I totally agree with you on that. You know, that's why I said that it can make the connection easier. It's not a prerequisite, you know, and if, you know, you are established in the US, like you have your group, you have your people, your tribe, your clan, whatever you know, you want to call it, then by all means stay there. You know, it's a web, it's the web of weird. And, you know, there are certain connections, of course, like we are connected all over the world. That's the, you know, the knots where the threads come together, what, you know, which makes the net. So, you know, if you're comfortable where you are and you feel the gods where you are and you can have that connection with the gods where you are, then, you know, by all means stay there. I think, you know, the gods would agree with that. You know, they look down at you and they're like, okay, you got a good life here, you know, we're looking after you here and you can connect with us here. Why are you going over there to start again? You know? Yeah.
I feel like and I posted something about this recently on some of my platforms was that, you know, the gods are less concerned with us on a day-to-day sort of thing as much as they are concerned with what are we doing to fulfill our obligations to our people, to our families, to our kin, to our tribes, right? Because we are known by our deeds. You know, the things that we read about in the stories, the myths, the sagas, these aren't stories of people who are just blogging about it or writing it down. Like these are stories of people that went out and did things. You know what I mean? They accomplished things, and the doers, the deeds are what I feel kind of create that immortal, timeless essence of us, right? We are remembered by what we've done, not by what we talked about.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, so much of what things that are being done today are stuff like this, like podcasts and other social platform distributions to talk about these things and to like spread that message, to spark that fire, to plant those seeds. And I was going to ask you too, with regards to your podcast, what made you want to start podcasting and particularly have a pagan podcast? What was the inspiration behind you starting that?
Well, the name Greyhorn Pagans is like, even that, there's a whole story attached to it. Like I said, I was like trying to find groups to join, groups that were like really dedicated to paganism and researching and, you know, gatherings and all of that, which, you know, was quite hard. So when I did find a good one, or what seemed to be a good one at first, Heathens, Foth and Honor, I can honestly say that from them I have learned most. You know, it seemed like a good group. It seemed like a good space to be in. But unfortunately, ego took over. And, you know, there were a couple of like bigger names in that group, which, you know, I commend them for it. It's absolutely amazing to have some more, you know, well-known writers and researchers in your group. But it was a lot of, like, I wanted to go further back, like not just Vikings and the Viking Age and all. Like, I wanted to go a bit further back to, you know, the Indo-European ages. Like, where do the ancestors of our ancestors come from? You know, what was paganism before it was paganism? But somehow that wasn't appreciated. I got told to delete those posts and to, you know, stop doing research and all, because that's not what the group was about, which I found very odd, but, you know, okay, so be it. And
now, you know, sorry to cut you off. Was this a strictly online group, or was this like grassroots also? Were there,
it was mostly online, but they were definitely making efforts, and were on their way to build it up as a physical society as well. You know, meetings did take place. I did meet one of the other European admins, a Belgian. So that was nice. It wasn't that long ways of a travel, but still kind of a vacation because it is still another country. So, you know, I did have good times there, but it was really as soon as egos took over that I found myself kind of drifting away from it, like wanting more, but not being able to get more. And that's when I started my own group. That's when I started the Greyhorn Pagans. And so that's, well, so that I could be in control, so to speak, so that I could, you know, if I wanted to go deeper, if I wanted to, you know, research or talk about some topics that maybe were related to it, but not specifically heathen or pagan, then I could, you know, and I wasn't being stifled or held back. And how I started podcasting is actually a few years ago when the whole world went crazy because of some virus. I had to take odd jobs here and there. I was working as a freelance cook at that time. So I, you know, lost it all. I wasn't able to freelance anymore, and most of the restaurants closed, of course. So I had to take odd jobs, with one of the first being delivery on bike. And if you work like 5 days a week, a couple hours a day, you know, you can only listen to your music playlists for so long, for so much, until it's like, okay, you know, I've heard this song come by 10 times already, and I've skipped over it like 20 times already. I need something new. And that became podcasts. So I started as a podcast fan first, just listening to different kinds of podcasts about, pro wrestling. I've always been a big pro wrestling fan, and, you know, more about the occult and paganism. Found a few things, already knew some creators like Survive the Jive, of course. And what really got it started for me is when I was a guest on My Third Eye, the My Third Eye podcast. I was invited, or like kind of got myself invited actually, to talk about Tartaria, the empire of Tartaria and cymatics and everything connected to that. And I just had so much fun doing that, and like doing a round table on his show once. That hi Tim, sorry, that's my
Oh, hey, we got another guest.
Yeah, I think he's wanting to go, so let me open the back door
real quick, sure.
So that he doesn't keep interrupting.
That's all good. Yeah, do your thing.
Yeah, Hoover.
Cats, you gotta love them.
You get they're something, man. They are. Even Dutch, even Dutch cats evidently have an attitude. It's just a cat.
Oh yeah, that's it's a worldwide thing. It's just a cat thing. Yeah. And he for sure has an attitude. He looks too much like me. But yeah, like I just had so much fun doing that I, you know, bought a microphone, like because I used the first, I believe the first podcast that I did with him was just like my laptop microphone. So it was, the quality was absolutely, absolutely horrendous. So
we've all been there, man. I look back at my old content and I'm like, man, why did I even bother back then? But you know, you make do with what you have best you can. So
yeah, no, of course, you know, everybody has to start somewhere. And like, little did I know that, you know, the quality would be absolutely, absolutely horrendous, you know, laptop speakers, laptop mic, not the best. So I just, you know, I started my own podcast, wanted to keep it with members of the Greyhorn Pagans first. And, you know, we did a couple things, which was, you know, it was nice. It was interesting, but I felt like if I wanted to grow the podcast and if I wanted to gain more knowledge, I had to branch out. And like, I saw all those podcasters and content creators, they were always doing series, you know, always doing multiple parts of a particular topic. So I was like, okay, what can I do? Like, what is kind of pagan related, but still, like, can still be relatable to other people? And, you know, just looking at the world around us, especially at that time, I think this was like about a year later, you know, I thought of Ragnarok. Because, you know, it pretty much seemed like the world was coming to an end. Or at least the world as we know it. And, you know, in the Eastern religions, that's, of course, like it's called the Kali Yuga. And then in the more Abrahamic faiths, it's the apocalypse. And we found some things that, like, sounded very similar. And so I just invited a whole bunch of people, and we did multiple hour shows talking about Ragnarok and the you know, the commonalities that we could find in the different texts, and you know, things that we saw around us, and trying to make sense of it and kind of relate to what was in the text. Like, okay, do we have examples, like actual physical examples of that in, you know, in our modern world, with the like biggest example being, for example, the ice giants. Well, what are like the modern day giants, like the tech giants, you know, Microsoft, Apple, and ice giants? Well, I mean, they're pretty numb. They don't care. So ice cold, icy, yeah, you know.
And trophy. So we, yeah.
So we puzzled some things together, and that was really the kickoff. I had so much fun doing that I, you know, I got myself some good editing programs. I got myself eventually a much better microphone with much better quality, and I've been doing it for like close to a year and a half now, just about all kinds of topics, all things that are interesting and,
yeah,
you know, not all pagan related necessarily, but all within the realms of paganism, witchcraft, mysticism.
Yeah, I've found myself doing something similar recently, just to mix things up a bit, because this is a heathen podcast, of course, and that's a very niche category, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And I don't want to sacrifice the integrity of the brand or the name or anything to just get more views or whatever, but it's also fun to get other people on the show that are maybe not necessarily pagan or anything. Like, I had a guy a few weeks ago who is a fitness coach, you know what I mean? And it was like, we weren't really talking so much about anything pagan related. It was just, what is this guy doing for his brand and his community? And I mean, because again, you never know just who's listening and watching your stuff, who's like, man, I need a fitness coach, or I need to talk to somebody about that. And the next thing you know, you through the networking capabilities, right, like you create this connection with people, you know. And talking about connections, you know, Greyhorn Pagan, you've mentioned a few times already, you know, the name of your podcast is the Greyhorn Pagans Podcast, but you've alluded to a group that you created called the Greyhorn Pagans. So can you tell us more about that? And is it an online thing only? You mentioned talking about, you know, bringing something up that's going to be more like grassroots or physical, but would you kind of fill us in on what and who the Greyhorn Pagans as a collective, as a group are, and what it represents?
Yeah, of course, I'd love to. The tribe of the Greyhorn Pagans is a tribe that I started, that I run together with my wife. It's a very eclectic bunch of people. We have pagans, witches, decoders, shamans, and I started it at first to be a group where people can just, you know, talk with each other, connect with other like-minded people, not necessarily be a content-based group, because there are already so many of those, where like the only discussion you really have is like in the comments underneath a post, and that's like only until, you know, the next bit of content shows up. So I really wanted to be a open group, open place for people of any spiritual path to connect with each other, to talk with each other about, you know, about their religion, about their beliefs, but also just about everyday things, because, you know, not every day, every minute can be about the gods, can be about your religion. I mean, even our ancestors just, you know, did small talk. So
right, yeah, just connect with people socially.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is still very much a online thing, but we are in the process of making it a recognized community, recognized religious community, both in the US and in Europe. So we're getting, we're trying to get together all the paperwork and all the, you know, all the money that, that needs to be spent and able to make that happen, because it's going to make things a lot easier if we are like truly recognized, if we want to have meetings, if we want to, you know, do rituals and all of that, if we can show, you know, to the,
The legitimacy of your organization. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes things a lot easier. And it's actually thanks to one of my recent guests on the Greyhorn Pagans podcast, who steered us in the right direction, because we already had it in mind that we wanted to do something like that. We just didn't know what to do. We didn't know where to start, you know, like, are we going to register as like a church? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not really a church, and like we need an actual building for that, and you know, all of that stuff. And it's like, okay, that's not happening. Okay, so like, how about we just call it a tribe, call it a religion, and by just putting it out there, make it legit. Yeah, okay, but like if we want to do things, then, you know, tax and the government always needs their cuts. And then it was Barry Lynn, actually, Reverend Barry Lynn, who steered us in the right direction, who told us, yeah, you know, it's just a bunch of very quick and easy paperwork to, you know, that and that government organization. And, you know, as long as they, like, they're pretty much going to agree anyway, because, like, you know, what do they care? Oh, you want to be a legit religious community or organization? Okay, cool. You know, just don't make any trouble.
Right. Well, that's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, of course,
if it's that easy for anybody, I mean, that no wonder there's so many problem children out here, as it were. You know, like, there's so, if anybody or everybody can just fill out a form, and the powers that be, as we'll say, are just like basically just writing them off, like, yeah, okay, whatever, just don't kill anybody or whatever. You know, it's no wonder that there's so many, again, like, problem organizations or groups that shed a bad light, or put heathenry and paganism in a negative light, if it's that easy.
Yeah, I mean, here in the Netherlands, I checked. Of course, it's there are a little more rules attached to it. We need a at least a physical address, like a physical postal address, which cannot be the private address of one of the members or one of the ones who signed the documents, and, you know, a phone number and all of that stuff, which can be, you know, the private number of one of the members or one of the founders. So I'm kind of, you know, looking into a few things. We already have a religious center like a couple minutes away from here who do rent out space for you know, freelancers or gatherings or whatever. So I'm like kind of in the process of doing some research on that, like, okay, so if I just, you know, like rent a space, even if I don't actually go there for, I don't know, let's say a day, a month, can I use it as a physical address? Can I, you know, give your phone number as the physical phone number? Because, right, you know, that would be just the biggest things. That's the major hurdle so far, you know, the physical address and the phone number, which both cannot be private, which is gonna, you know, cost some amount of money, and far I'm paying everything out of my own pocket, and, you know, doing it for the love of the tribe and love of my people and the love of my fellow tribal members. You know, we're a great group. We have some amazing people, but I'm not made of money. So
right, nobody is, man. I mean, there's very few, I think, especially when we're talking like this type of thing, you know, like, we're not rolling in it over here. And I think that's an important aspect to take into consideration when you have groups, when you have a group, when there's a community that's been built to support one another, that the part of supporting one another is to fund and to contribute in monetarily. You know what I mean? Because like you say, you know, we're not all made of money. So if it's one person's responsibility to cover all of this cost, it almost certainly won't happen. But if you have, you know, 20 people split the cost up of something, you know, or you know, have it to be where, you know, some organizations have these like dues, you know, that are paid, annual dues, fees and things. Well, that money is not going into someone's pocket. It's going into the treasury for the expense of keeping up the organization or you know, the day-to-day or event type things that happen. Yeah. So if you know, when you legitimize it, when you go through the legal processes and do all that stuff, then yeah, it makes it much easier to fund these types of things and make it not so much of a burden on one person.
No, exactly, because like you can do outside fundraisers as well. You know, even if it's like technically a non-profit, you just make sure that you have enough expenses that you you run at a loss every year or something. You know, expenses are always going to be there. You know, there are always things that need to be paid, people that need to be paid. You know, indeed, step one is legitimizing it, and from there, everything will be a lot easier. So we are currently in the process of doing that, and in the meantime, we're trying to legitimize ourselves as a tribe, as a group. Our Thane actually just released his book. He wrote his own book. I'm in the process of editing my own book at the moment. So
you said Thane?
Yeah, Thane. It's like what in English in the Anglo-Saxon times a earl would be, for example.
Yeah.
So he's the second after the duke. Thane would be a duke. He's the second in command, if you will, after the earl. The jarl is his right hand man.
Oh, okay. So you guys have like a you favor a. Would you say, I'm going to ask, would you say you favor, like, in terms of your leadership structure, titles and whatnot, does it mirror the titles or terms that we see in, like, Anglo-Saxon heathenry?
So we do try to do that, yes. So I call myself the Jarl of the Tribe of the Grey Realm Pagans, since I am, you know, the leader and founder. My wife is the Fru. Because she is, you know, the Jarl's wife.
Okay.
Thane or Duke in Anglo-Saxon, I think that maybe a little easier since it's an English name, is the right-hand man of the Jarl, you know, the second in command, if you will. We have Raven Wolfgar, who is our Vitki. Our spiritual guide, if you will. He does tarot readings and all of that, so he's really in touch with the gods and
mystic
with the other
side.
With energies. Yeah. He's really in touch with the mystic side. Yeah. Basically us four are the core of the Grey Pagans, of course, along with Josh, the Thane Josh, his wife. Raven is still single, so if there are any lovely ladies out there, I'm sure he will.
we turned the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast into what was that thing back in the day, boy? You would call in and hey ladies or hey gentlemen, right, whatever it was, you know, you would like those dating hotlines.
Oh, I had so many of those dating shows, dating hotlines. It's like
they were creepy back then, boy. There were some weird ones.
Oh yeah.
There's some odd ones back there. So that's cool, man. Our, you know, so in my part of the country, I feel fortunate to have become familiar with a lot of heathen groups. And believe it or not, like, this part of the country gets referred to as the Bible Belt. Mm. Because every corner that you turn down, there's a church, you know what I mean? And it's very, very heavily influenced by Christianity. And if you're looking for a church, you don't have to look far, you know what I mean? So I would say the majority of the population religiously are Christian to some degree at some point. However, there is a rich and vibrant community of alternative religions, not just European paganism. You know, so we have like Celtic groups. There are covens. There are kindreds of Germanic heathens, one of which is ours, of course. But there is another one that is in like about about 50 miles or so northeast of where I live. So it's in like the middle Tennessee area, but in this area, there are, again, small little secular kindreds or tribes where one of them, but one of the more prominent ones, one of the ones that do a lot of public events in our area, is about 30 miles northeast of Nashville, which is about 30 miles southeast of me. So I say, you know, 50, 60 miles, in that vicinity.
Yeah.
And, but I'm fortunate to have, again, to been intertwined with so many different groups, because there are regular just public meetups. Like today, while I'm recording this, there's a, they call them PNOs or pagan night outs, but it's during the day, where people just like meet up at a coffee shop or at a restaurant or something, and just have a meal, just share time with somebody, you know, with people. Yeah. And so they happen biweekly in our area. And then there are actual like events that get put on by this group up in Springfield. They're called Raven Moon Hearth. And I'm friends with their chieftain, and I'm friends with their Gothi and other members of their kindred as well. But our group is smaller. You know, we're not quite on that scale yet to have land or physical space, but we go and we attend, and we see all kinds of folks show up. You know, there are people that show up who aren't traditionally like hardcore Germanic heathens. There are people that show up that have a bit more of an eclectic background. I've seen people show up there who really tap into their indigenous African side of things. Like they come and they dress in their like traditional African garb, you know, to these events. And I'm like, that's wild, man. Like that's
really cool.
That it is. It's really cool. It's great to see. Like you wouldn't think, on the surface at least, a lot of people wouldn't think that a group of Germanic heathens or pagans who host events like this would attract or have anybody like outside of that worldview of things come to their events. And yet here we are, you know, having people come in who find things about this path close enough to their beliefs that they're like, I want to come and experience this. I want to see what it's like. And I want to, you know, have that experience. And even if they don't, you know, commit 100% fully to their, you know, the Germanic side of things, at least it's giving them the inspiration. It's giving them the desire to pursue things that are close to them, that speak to them, you know, and it inspires them to want to embrace that side of their heritage. And I think that's beautiful, you know, and we're very inclusive in that way. We want people to, at least that's, I say we, but it's like the Hearth, the Raven Moon Hearth people, they are very inclusive, and so are we. My tribe is called Hlurithi Folk, Thundering Storm, people of the Thundering Storm. And we're also like, when we do things, we're going to do it the Germanic way. We're going to hail the gods in that way. But we're also welcoming to people that want to come and say, you know, be, you know, Celtic or Egyptian or any other sort of polytheistic path. And it sounds a bit to me like, you know, with the Greyhorn pagans, you know, the vision that you had to create this community of an acceptable space for people to come and learn about things is similar. Would you say that it has a very similar mentality or a similar approach or?
Yeah. I mean, we're not strictly about European paganism or the, you know, the European beliefs. I mean, just because it's, you know, run by European and other Germanic pagans and all doesn't mean that it has to be strictly about that. I mean, like I said, we recently had a few more people joining, one of whom a true shaman, and he, you know, he got his training, he found his shamanism, did most of his work in India and Sri Lanka. We have Buddhists, Hindu, a couple Hindus, people who just like don't really know yet, but are trying to find their path. Who are, you know, of course, also most welcome. That's another reason why I founded the Grammar Pagans, to also be that space for people who feel like there is more, who feel some sort of connection, but just don't know what it is yet, but you know, you want to find out. You know, my wife's a witch, of course, very, very eclectic. She works with, is not the right way of saying it, but she, she does a lot with the Egyptian pantheon, some of the great gods, and because of me is also learning a lot more and connecting more with some of the Norse goddesses, Freya in particular. She's found a very strong connection with Freya lately, which makes sense.
Yeah, this the Volva, you know, the magical side of things that Freya is mentioned or attested to in the mythology, you know.
Yeah. So my wife is very eclectic. I am, well, Germanic pagan at heart, but you know, seeker of gnosis. So I like dive into any and every rabbit hole that I can find. We're a pretty eclectic tribe. Like I do indeed want to be a place for all people, for all spiritual people, religious people worldwide. As long as you're accepting of others' beliefs and don't make too much
respectful. Yeah, you know, yeah. Being respectful. I think that's the most important thing, because, like, let's face it, like there are things, even, you know, if it works for some, it doesn't work for all, and that's okay. You don't have to just be like, I don't have to accept everything, but I can be respectful of people's decisions. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I think you're an idiot, but I respect your decision to be an idiot. I mean, like, you know, I don't have to necessarily accept it and be like, oh, I think I'm going to do that. Like, no, I mean, have your barriers, have your boundaries. I think that's goes without saying, but, you know, not to be so far, like so hardly driven, like drawing the line so hard in the sand that it's, because I've experienced that, and I don't know if you have too, where like some groups or some people, it's again, it goes back to that, like absolutes, dealing in absolutes. It's either this and that's it, or it's not and that's it. There's a lot of things that happen in the gray, and one of the things that paganism has taught me, and of course, you know, my angle is heathenry, Germanic heathenry. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that it's taught me is what happens in the gray. You know, that there's a lot that goes on that you can't really definitively draw hard lines in, and some people want to get pretty aggressive when it comes to that, and be like, no, it has to be this thing that way or the other. I'm like, yeah, but why really? Why? Like, why do we have to be so left or right? I mean,
some pagan groups manage to be dogmatic, which is just, I don't get that. You know, that was what I was talking about with Heathens, Froth, and Honor. It started off as a, you know, as a really good group, you know, a bunch of really cool people who seemed to know what they were talking about. But then, you know, as soon as ego took over, it was, you know, their way and their way only. And if you tried to bring anything outside of that in, you got a stern talking to. And, you know, at some point I even, you know, I got called out in the admin admin group chats that, you know, I had to control my wife. And I was like, excuse me?
Excuse me, yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, look, there's, I think, dogma, right? That's a topic that I've had, I haven't really, like, dived into too heavily. I think that depending on the angle that you're approaching heathenry at, you know, I think that if you're open enough to the studies and the research of things, I think that it's impossible for you not to see that dogma exists in heathenry to some degree. Yeah. There are certain things that are dogmatic about heathenry. Like if you look at, and this, the exact source is escaping me, but I want to say that it was Swedish in its origin. Of Winter Nights. Mm-hmm. And different times, different regions celebrated different Winter Nights differently, to the extent that, like, for instance, I believe the Norwegians' Winter Nights celebrations evolved to become a public affair. People would come and they would celebrate Winter Nights with everybody. Whereas the Swedes, I think it was the Swedes. I don't want to, if anybody watches and listens and catches this and finds something differently, share it in the comments below. I want to say it was the Swedes, where Winter Nights was strictly a family affair, to the point where if somebody came and knocked on the door trying to find shelter during their Winter Night celebration, you were turned away. You were like, the hell with hospitality at this point. We're doing our Winter Nights things and you're not part of the clan. You're not part of the family. Get out. They gatekept that celebration. They kept it separate from everything outside. And that's dogmatic. Like, I mean, that's dogmatic to them. That was the, we are absolutely not budging here on this particular thing. You know what I mean? And I think it's important to remember too, like what we're looking at and the time of when it was happening. So many things that I see happening nowadays is people, you know, we're talking about reconstruction, revitalizing an old ways religion. You know, things that happened before Christianity, before the Viking Age. You mentioned earlier about wanting to investigate and learn about things that happened prior to the Viking Age, when Scandinavia and these countries became Christianized. When you start realizing like the various like regional and closed off practices of certain areas, well, why was it that way? That was also a very long time ago, and we're now in modern times, and it's, you know, is it practical anymore to be that, to have that such a hard line drawn in the sand? I don't know, you know, to some degree, I think that preserving that, the integrity of the belief, the integrity of the practice for what it is noble. I think I think the intentions maybe are valid. But the purpose behind it, if you don't go into the purpose of why it was done back then, then you're missing the mark. You're missing the point.
Yeah.
Don't just do it because it was done that way 1,000 years ago. Why was it done that way 1,000 years ago? What was the purpose behind it? And if you can develop your purpose now and apply it in a modern context that works now, understanding some of the worldviews of the Germanic peoples and seeing how it can transfer into a modern day worldview or a modern day approach to things, then by all means, like, you know, I wouldn't stop anybody, but don't just like jump on this bandwagon of doing things because it was done 1,000 years ago and that's the only reason why we're doing it.
Yeah. No, that's, you know, also one of the bigger questions that I try to answer in, or try to find some sort of answer in the tribe and on the podcast, is how do we apply the ancient knowledge in these times? You know, as you just explained, like, okay, they did it a certain way. Why did they do it? And how do we apply it to these times? Like, we're living in, you know, 2023, not 1,023. Mm-hmm. Times are different, times have changed, and to like completely ignore that, or just, you know, don't want to give in. It's like, oh, this is how our ancestors did it. This is how we are going to do it. No, that's not possible anymore. You know, not one on one, not a carbon copy. Sure, you can still do things the way they did it. Of course, by all means, do so. But you have to adapt. You have to adapt certain practices. You have to evolve with the times as well. And, you know, one of the bigger questions in, well, I think, like, the whole pagan revival is, how do we do that? How do we apply the knowledge and the ways of our ancestors in these times? Because, you know, back then, they didn't have, you know, computers, podcasts, whatever. I mean, heck, like, even 20 years ago, we didn't have things like podcasts.
I know, right?
Like, how did the tribes connect? Well, you know, either they already knew of each other, or they stumbled into each other, or, you know.
Yeah. Or there were annual assemblies. Like, you know, we have sources that confirm, I believe it was with the all thing. So you had your all thing. You had every year there was all the tribes would come together and meet at one place.
That was when the politicking was done. That's when, you know, beefs were settled and all of that. So
you didn't have an online comment section that you could shit talk to each other in, you know. it was man, you know, a year ago, you know, Stein, not to, like, I'm just using names, all right, Stein over here, you know, he took some of my sheep, and we didn't get to settle that. Well, now we're here at the All Thing, and Stein and Jesse are at the All Thing. And by the way, you know, you owe me some sheep. So what are we going to do about it? Are we going to go to war, or are you going to pay a penalty, or whatever? And that was the purpose of the All Thing. Like, yeah, all the things, but all the tribes came together.
You duke it out, or, you know.
Right. And that was, again, that was how things worked at the time. We're not in those times anymore. You know, having an All Thing, or calling it as such, is cool, right? Like, it's great. Like, oh wow, cool. Like, we're gonna have this All Thing where all the tribes of the region or something are gonna come. But why? Why are we having an All Thing? Is it because this tribe and that tribe are having a beef and we need to settle it because it's doing damage to the overall larger community? Because when these two groups are feuding, it's not allowing for growth. It's stifling the progression of things, right? And we need to come to an agreement of, well, once this thing happens, once this is done, it's done. The beef is settled. We've squashed it. Now let's move on. You know, or is it just this or is it just this thing where we're calling it an All Thing and we're not putting enough respect on that? And it's just an opportunity for people to hang out and drink and get stupid and crazy and do all kinds of bad things and further damage each other's luck and the luck, the collective luck of tribes, you know. Like, it,
I mean, if you want to do that, go right ahead, but then don't call it an All Thing. Just call it a meeting, call it a gathering, call it whatever, you know.
Yeah,
don't
call it a moot, yeah, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, you know.
There's a place for that. Like, there's, you know, it's, hey, I'm not saying, like, don't, you know, I'm not trying to be a stick in the mud here. Like, hey, sometimes it's really, it's good. It's wholesome for people to gather and just have a good time, you know, within reason and have boundaries set and be respectful, of course. But I mean, that's just what it is. That's what it's about. It's about gathering, having a good time, tying that kind of weird together, like you talked about before, that the web and the threads that get interwoven. It can do really good things. It could also do damaging things if you're not careful and you're not, you don't have those safeguards in place. But it goes back to what I was saying about the gatekeeping thing or being a gatekeeper. Is like, but well, why did the Swedes not want outsiders coming into their house during winter nights? Well, there was a purpose behind it, because that was for the family. That was just for the family, or for the families, you know. It wasn't for anybody outside. It's like, hey, not trying to be a jerk, but get out. You're not welcome here. You've got 300 and some odd other days of the year that you could, you know, tough luck. Sorry, Charlie. Like, you know, I hate it for you, but you're just not welcome here. We're doing our thing now. And that's okay. It's fine. It's good to have those boundaries set and to be staunch in that, you know, in that context, I feel in that area of
the family. No, definitely. I mean, it's a religious feast just for the family. So keep it in the family or the families of that village or tribe or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And outsiders, I mean, sorry, you know, this is how we set our rules. This is how we set our boundaries. You're not part of it. Next time, you know, try some other day.
Right. And that's so much of what we see, I think, on which, by the way, you said, you know, your Greyhorn Pagans, the tribe of the Greyhorn Pagans, as you call it. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you guys?
We are on all kinds of different platforms. All can be found on our websites, www.greyhornpagans.com. The website is still fairly new. I'm, you know, editing things and trying to make it look nice and have everything on there. Like, we were on so many different platforms and scattered that I was like, you know, we just need a website where I can put it all on and then people can go to the website.
One-stop shop,
It's just so much easier. Otherwise, it's a whole, like, laundry list. Okay, so we're on that platform. We're there. You can find us here and there. It's just like, no, go to www.greyhornpagans.com. That's where all the links are to, you know, personal links to, you know, our blogs, Thane Josh's book, to... Okay. You know, social platforms that we are on. The podcast can be found on there, of course.
Awesome. So then people that are listening and watching, head into the description show notes area of the podcast, and greyhornpagans.com is the website, and that's where you can find everything about what Stein here is talking about. And it doesn't matter where you are in the world from the sounds of it. You know, you can be in the United States, you can be in Europe. You can learn more about what these folks are doing.
You can be a penguin on the South Pole for all I care. I mean, that's a bit much.
Man, you never know, man. There might be some penguins down there looking for a community. You never know, right?
That'd be a first. I'm definitely one of a kind.
That would be. Well, this has been a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you coming on and sharing with the world, you know, what's going on in your neck of the woods, but how you're attempting to branch out and reach more people. And also, I'm really glad to hear that you're also looking at the grassroots aspect of things, you know, having things established for people on the ground, because there's a lot of this stuff online nowadays, and people think that once they're joining a group online or they're in a Discord server or a Facebook group or whatever, that yes, I am now a member of the tribe and I am, you know, we are brothers and sisters and rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, I mean, I don't want to speak on behalf of all Germanic heathens or be this like spokesperson for heathenry by any means. All I'm saying is that no, that ain't it, buddy. That's not it. You have to be with people in person to experience these things, at least to that degree. Have that community on the grassroots level, because that's how it was done. That's where this all comes from. And yes, we are modern heathens. We live in modern times. We are practicing old ways in modern times. Many of us, again, revitalizing, trying to reconstruct or revitalize these ways. But at its very root and at the very core, it has to be something that you share with people face to face. And if people that are, like you or others are out here building an online community to help network and show case the ability to do that and establish things at the grassroots level, then I'm all for it. And so I'm glad to hear that you've got that envision that you're not just like, let's get 10,000 people in our Discord server and now we're, you know, we're taking over the world, guys. Like, maybe not.
You know, it's a good start, of course, to
yeah, it has its place.
Come together in those online communities. It's a good place to, you know, kind of get to know people at first, but
yeah,
it's a start. You know, it's something. It's, you know, it can be a foundation, but build from there.
Yeah, yeah, and it, you know, again, it has its place. I've become friends with people to the extent that you can be online because of the modern conveniences of social media. I've also been able to establish really meaningful frith bonds with people at the grassroots level because of this. You know, it didn't, it started online, but it didn't end online. We made the efforts to connect physically and become something of what our ancient ancestors had, you know, the sense of community, the meaning of tribe. You know, having the people that you can rely on who rely on you, that reciprocal existence.
Yeah.
It's paramount, I think, to developing our worldviews and refining our worldviews and becoming heathens and pagans ourselves that reflect the way it was done in bygone days, you know. We're just showcasing the modern flair of it now and showing, you know, stuff like this didn't happen, you know, like you said, you know, even as early as, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, people didn't have this kind of interaction like we're having here now. It was, you know, letters in the mail or, you know, and it took months, if not longer, to get people together like that. But I think it's interesting how, you know, back in the day where, you know, communities were much more closely knit, you know, villages and whatnot were the miles between them, the kilometers between them, the distance, I say, between them wasn't very vast. You know, it may have taken a day to get to you, but that was, you know, what, maybe 10 miles, 15 miles apart because you had to walk. You had to take a horse, you know, and now here we are, you know,
you had to take provisions with
continents.
You.
Yeah. Okay, but and now here we are, you know, continents apart, thousands of kilometers apart, thousands of miles apart, having real time conversation. It's wild. It's wild, you know. And
there's a whole ocean between us, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So using these things and leveraging them to connect in such ways, I think helps showcase again the sense of community as it was. It doesn't replace that interpersonal grassroots level thing. Let me be clear, it doesn't replace it, but it really helps with growing it in that way and allowing it to expand for people. So
yeah, it helps getting a community together from which you can build. It's you know, it's all fine and dandy to, you know, want a tribe, but or, you know, want to have that, to build it up from the grassroots level, but you got to have support. You got to have people interested. You got to have, you know, you got to have your people. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to have your people, man. And the people that you have to trust you. You have to trust them. There has to be this reciprocity, you know, obligation, understanding, that sort of thing. Like if I need you, I know I can rely on you. If you need me, you know, you can rely on me. Like there's all of that that becomes integral with this. But this has been great, man. I appreciate you coming on today. Hang on just a minute while I sign everybody off. But any last words that you'd like to tell my audience or share with the world before I wrap this up today?
Oh, that's a good one. I just want to thank you for having me on. It's been great, and I look forward to a possible next time, because I think we can definitely build on this. And good luck with your group, with your kindreds, and I hope you make something great of it.
Thank you, and same to you as well. It's very ambitious what you have with the Greyhorn Pagans, and I hope that the good that you're wanting to come of it, it comes to fruition. Best of luck to you with that.
Thank you.
That's the spirit. So everybody, please to check out the description or show notes of the podcast and check out Greyhorn Pagans online. Follow along with what they're doing. Stein here, thank you so much for taking time out of your day all the way in the Netherlands to speak with me today here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. It's been wonderful, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For everybody, yes, sir. And for everybody else that's out here listening and watching today, thank you for your constant support. Check the description show notes for the Linktree link to all the ways that you can support Midgard Musings and the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. As a whole, follow me on all the socials. Do all the things that these fickle algorithm gods so ungraciously demand. And until we see each other again, may the gods continue to notice you, and may your ancestors smile upon you.